Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Good to be back with you, everybody. Hope you had a great 4th of July. It is sizzling hot across the country. I hope you are able to stay cool over that. You know what? I went up to Minnesota, as they say in parts of the country, my home state, and I went up there to try to take some time to relax and escape the heat. You think I escaped the heat? No. I tell you, it was hotter than Texas up there, and it literally, and suffocating humidity. Hopefully you guys had a great week and a great 4th of July. It's good to have you be a part of the broadcast each and every week. We got a great lineup for us to talk about. We, of course, got Joe Farn, Al Salvi, our regulars on there, and Andy Schell is out in San Francisco getting ready to attend the Western Secondary Conference. He won't be on the broadcast, but we have Mike Fratantoni, who's with us, who's with the NBA. Very excited to have Mike on. We had him on, gave us a little tease for what he's going to be talking about today. In great detail, but there's been development since there. There is so much developing in this industry, it's almost impossible to stay on top of it. That's why we have this broadcast. It's a public service to the industry, for the industry, by us as mortgage professionals. We're certainly not talk show professionals, but we do like doing this broadcast and providing and bringing you the latest update and all that's going on. Let's get going on and start talking about interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with us each and every week. What is going on with MBS prices today?
Well, they're up again. Imagine that.
They're up again.
We're at the highest all time. You know, Friday was the highest all time. Today we're up 4/32nd. So that's on the 3.5. We're at almost a price of 106 on the Fannie Mae 3.5% mortgage-backed security. Isn't that amazing?
Wow.
Nothing really new today. Dow's down a little bit. No economic data released. And one of the few days we hadn't had some significant new news out of Europe. We are seeing the Italian and Spanish bond yields move higher. In fact, Spain yields are above 7%, almost back to where they were before the EU summit announcement on the 29th, when those yields really backed off a bit. But it's a relatively a quiet day today.
Yeah, that is interesting. You know, Chuck Klein is over there in Spain vacationing, my business partner. He and some friends are over there, and he are sending me pictures from Spain. And I was thinking, I don't think he's thinking about the Spanish bond market that's going on in the yield.
No, he's helping the economy, though, huh?
But he is stimulating the Spanish economy in another way, that is for sure. So let's talk a little bit about the EU summit. Anything that we should be paying attention to there that you think is anything that's significant that came out of it?
That was what caused yields to fall. Last week, prior to now, and it's a little disappointing that its benefits have not lasted longer. I mean, it's only been a little more than a week, and here we are already right back to over 7%. So, The benefits didn't last very long.
Benefits didn't last. I was reading an article in the Wall Street Journal from the weekend edition about Germany and their whole view and their comments on, and it was Schroeder. When he was chancellor in the late 90s, early, it really set the stage for some of the measures that he took to strengthen the German economy. I hope some of our politicians take note of it. I certainly hope Spain, France, Italy, some of the other countries take note of it, because what they did, they took the tough measures, made some tough decisions, and it's really had – you look at where Germany's at. Let's get into talking about this week.
They're the bright spot.
All right, bright spot. This week.
Last week. Let's talk about last week.
First. We don't want to get into this week. Let's talk about last week.
Jumping ahead.
Backwards here.
Last week was a great week for mortgage rates. Now, not so good for the economy, but it was a great week for mortgage rates. We reached all-time highs again, like I said. MBS yields are down around 2.6%, which is just amazing to me. Freddie Mac's new all-time low rate 3.62%, and Fannie Mae's required net yield's down to like 3.12. So, you know, these are historically low rates, as we all know. And the cause, you know, the cause is just weak economic data. It's lack of confidence in the economy and a desire to invest your money in safe assets. And so, you know, in the U.S., the jobs report last week was very disappointing, as we all know by now. The ISM index on Monday was below 50, which indicates contraction in the manufacturing sector. And the ISM services index was the weakest it's been since January 2010. So nothing very positive happening in the U.S., at least, and in Europe the same way. ECB reduced their interest rates to try to spur the economy, and then in a surprise, China did the same thing.
That was a surprise.
Rates.
Yeah,
very much of a surprise. So, weak economic growth, Dave, eliminates the concern about future inflation, or at least it puts it off for some period of time, and increases the demand for safe assets. And right now, for the world, the U.S. government guaranteed MBS and Treasury bonds are safe assets, and that's where we're seeing a lot of demand come in, and that demand's causing prices to rise and yields to fall.
That is, there's several things that was interesting about last week that I thought China's move was quite frankly the one that I thought, I wonder what's behind that. That was one that kind of, I guess, a bit took me by surprise.
I don't know the true rates. Maybe Michael can give us some insight on that. But, you know, they had such good growth rates for a while, and they have started to see a slowdown. And, boy, when China slows down, their economy is large enough to where it changes the economies of other countries.
Yeah. I mean, what's that expression, when China catches a cold, the rest of us get pneumonia or something? I mean, I think that's really the case. Let's look forward to this week now. What do we got coming
Not
up?
Not much
in
this week.
Court?
Yeah, there's you know, the inflation report, PPI, comes out on Friday. So, you know, I mentioned little concern for future inflation. Well, I'm sure that the Friday PPI inflation report will confirm that inflation's not a concern right now. Before that, the FOMC minutes will be released on Wednesday at 2 o'clock, and that has been a market-moving event in the past few months anyway. And then we have Treasury auctions, the 2, 10, and 30-year Treasury auctions coming out on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Those are always significant to, at least the 10 and the 30 are very significant to MBS and mortgage rates. And the last time the Treasury auctioned securities a couple weeks ago, they were met with pretty weak demand. So it'll be interesting to see. I think with the jobs report and the things going on in Europe, we might see that demand increase this week. So that's all that's on the calendar for this week, Dave.
Well, you know what? What I like about your service, Joe, is that you send out these email updates with routinely, but they're short, sweet, and to the point. You can capture the data and what's going on that's significant. So I always tell people, if you want to go look at pretty screens, go with another service. You want meaningful data sent to your phone because you're a busy executive, you need to use MBS QuoteLine. It's the right service. We appreciate you bringing it to us, and tell everyone there, all your compadres there at the MBS QuoteLine, hello and thank you, and for their contribution to this program. Thank you so much, Joe. We'll be right back.
Absolutely.
And we'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur.
Get MBS prices as trades happen.
Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com.
MBSQuoteLine.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you back with us. By the way, I said, you know, if you want to look at pretty screens, I mean, actually, MBS QuoteLine has got really pretty screens. I'm looking at it right now. It's got great data in there, too. It's concise. That's what I think I was trying to say. It's concise and to the point. Someone else who's trying to get all the data that's going on out there in the world and bring it down to a concise point of view is Alice Alvey and her amazing team of professionals there at Mortgage U. And we're so glad, mortgage-u.com. So glad to have you with us, Alice. Give us an update. And by the way, Alice, thank you so much for running the program while I was out up in Minnesota trying to stay cool. What do you got for us today? I assume CFPB is back in the news.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, Dave, and thank you. We missed you last week. But, CFPB is starting to roll out with several of the proposals. So I really recommend that folks check out their website, consumerfinance.gov, and actually go to the section about notice and comments down from the regulation drop-down box. There's a place you can select notice and comments. That's the quickest way to get to being able to respond to what's going on at the CFPB as all of these things start to roll out. I'm looking at it right now. Nothing on loan officer compensation yet, folks, so no need to panic. But what I am just baffled by is that the comment period closes today on the qualified mortgage proposed rule, and there are only 63 comments.
Wow.
I sure hope we're not going to get people, 2 months from now when we end up with this crazy QM rule who are complaining and they didn't comment. So, folks, this is like get out and vote. You need to get to that website. If you don't know what to say, there are some really well-worded posted comments out there. Look at for some of the ones, I can't name names on the air, but there are definitely some really good ones out there where people have taken the time to create their own letter, and they make some really valid and important comments that maybe you can just, share and say ditto to. I understand the Mortgage Bankers Association will have theirs up already. The Brokers Association has one up. But you've got to get out to that website, go to consumerfinance.gov, and select from the regulations tab, notice and comments, and be sure to post your comment about those QM provisions. Remember, the biggest issue here is making comments about DTIs in particular. Is it reasonable, the ratios that they're looking at, 28-36 for qualifying? How does that compare with, what you're seeing today in defining a qualified mortgage and a customer's ability to repay? And then the second component being the litigation impact potential with this. So make sure you get out there and read it. Listen to our previous shows where we've talked quite a bit about this over the last several Mondays. So that's issue number one. Issue number two, as I was looking at the CFPB proposals, there's one out there that I think a lot of people have just not really paid attention to. There are only 6 comments about this, and it really is about supervisory authority over certain non-bank covered persons based on risk determination. This, to me, is an example of a rule that is just flying under the radar. But if you think about the implication of this, the CFPB can be all over anybody with this rule. Basically, they're saying if they believe that a covered person a non-covered person is engaging or has engaged in conduct that poses risk to consumers with regard to offering or providing any kind of consumer product or services, they can go after you. So what I'm concerned about is it says individual person. So does that mean an individual now becomes liable? I'm going to go after you, not a company, for example. So I really think you have to look at that. This process they've described here. I mean, the main part of the rule was to outline a process. Well, the process is, here's your letter that you're guilty, sign here, or you can give us a call. You kind of look at the way they describe this process, you're going, wow, kind of looks like I'm guilty before I get a chance to prove I'm innocent. They go, oh, yeah, by the way, you'll get to comment. It doesn't seem like it's comprehensive enough to really create a framework to defend yourself. So I would like folks to make sure they take a look at that proposed rule. It's out there with comments period open until the 24th. So you, make sure you get out a chance and check that one as well. I think, I wrote on the 13th on my notes, but I'm looking now. It's open till the 24th.
Okay, good.
So those are the main things. The other thing, for those of you who handle reverse mortgages, CFPB is on a mission to find out how is this impacting consumers. So there is a proposed rule, a solicitation out there for comments from consumers about why do you make a decision for a reverse mortgage. Hey, I think I'm allowed to respond if my parents are looking for a reverse mortgage even though I'm in the business, right? Get out there, put in some factors about why do you see consumers needing a reverse mortgage and the benefits. They're going to come down hard on those loans to make sure it's, again, a benefit to the borrower. That comment period is open until August 31st. 1st. So get out there and comment, folks. Get used to this. It's a long road for the rest of the year. You might as well make this a weekly habit. So that's my report for today, Dave. I'll turn it back to you.
Well, I think the point that I walk away from as you listen to this is that if this is only going to be for the mortgage professionals. Because if you're just doing this business as a casual participant and you're just out here to, you know, try to make some money off it, and you know what? You're going to be subject to some things that are probably could be unpleasant. And I tell you, this comment period is so critical. They're actually reading. They're required to read these comments. So get it in there. Get it out there. And it's just so specific, so important, and so specific to your business, your operating this business. You don't think it applies to you? You think it just applies to the big companies? You are wrong. You just heard it from Alice. They could, and it's the way this is worded, could be coming after you. You folks, you listeners, have got to get in there and make the comments. They say, well, I don't know what to say. You know what? This is where plagiarism will work well. Just read the comments are up there. Turn it into your own words if you believe it, and as long as it comes from your beliefs within you, then it'll register. Alice, thank you so much for bringing us an update. What's that? Where did they make the comments again? What's the website?
Consumerfinance.gov, and then from select regulations from the tab. It's a very easy website to use, and then underneath regulations is notice and comments, and you'll see them all out there to pick from.
Well, there's a lot going on. We're going to be talking more when we get Michael on the program. There's some other things happening in the news that out there. This mortgage seizure plan in California has really got some interesting things. So, Alice, I don't know how you stay on top of it all, but we do appreciate it. Do greet your team. We want to say a special thank you to the group there for all that they do to keep us updated on all that's happening. Appreciate it, Alice.
Thank you. Folks, we'll
be right back after this brief break.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Good to have you back with us. We've got Tony Garitano that's on the phone right now. I just realized I hadn't turned on his microphone. I just clicked that on, so I think, Tony, your microphone's live. Hope you had a good 4th of July, Tony. Good to have you be back with us. And I've got a couple questions for you about some things going on in the world of technology, Tony, that are really interesting. I read these while I was on vacation and carrying my iPhone, and I'm just staying up on all the news. But there was an announcement by LPS that they are acquiring an LOS lending space and an LOS mortgage Cadence, where, let's see, LPS was acquired. Can you help me? What's going on here with the acquisitions? I got a little confused the way some of this was written. And I'd like your take on these acquisitions and some of the consolidation we see, Tony.
Well, to your point, Dave, LPS acquired web-based loan origination system lending space.
That's right.
LPS now has three different LOS offerings. They have Empower, they bought PC Lender last year, and now they have Lending Space. And then in a separate deal that happened just 2 weeks ago, LOS Mortgage Cadence bought another LOS in Prime Alliance Solutions. So you had two big LOS deals by companies that already have LOSs done within the past, you know, 2 or 3 weeks.
Well, what's your take on this? Is this just to buy up market share to take out competitors, pick up users, and start consolidating them? I mean, what's your take on this?
I'm not altogether happy with it, Dave, because from my perspective, as you know, I'm a big proponent of innovation. And
yes.
I think that if the mortgage industry is going to evolve, is going to get out of this mess, is going to come across on the other side better than what we were before, we're going to have to look at the process differently. And what I'm seeing is LOS acquisitions, whether they're acquiring another LOS or you have an LOS acquiring a company that does something that is not already done within the LOS, like docs or pricing or whatever the case may be, what you're seeing is LOS companies that are doing well acquire either competitors or other features that they don't already do, and these LOS companies are becoming even bigger.
Interesting.
To me, that's a little bit troubling but you can understand why they're doing it. If I'm an LOS, I want more market share. I want to control the customer. So I don't want them necessarily to leave my system, and I don't want them necessarily to switch off of my system. So I'm going to acquire a doc company, a PPE company, an automated underwriting company, and my LOS is going to control everything. And
That's what seems to be going on, yes. It's all about control.
But that also puts the lender more tightly in bed with the LOS, which is good
right.
for the LOS, but I'm just concerned that might not be good for the lender. Because then you have an LOS that does everything, but it's really hard to switch off of that LOS.
Well, what is LOS companies that become bigger, as they do that, what should lenders be looking for in LOS? It seems like there's less selection. So does this create a different focus for lenders as they consider a new LOS system?
Well, I think that if I'm a lender, instead of asking the LOS, do you have these features and functionality, what I would be asking the LOS is, what's your vision for the future?
That's good.
And, you know, how are you going to get me as a lender there? Because if the LOS is just acquiring a doc company, a pricing company, an AUS company, a competing LOS to be a big 800-pound gorilla in the space, and they're not finding a way to add value and prepare the lender for the future, then the lender is just going to be in bed with a big LOS and they can't switch off of it, and they're going to be stuck.
Yeah.
So I think
it's
increasingly important, Dave, that lenders ask about innovation and future direction.
Well, I think that's why it's so critical that we really focus on this topic, because never have we been in an industry, never has our industry been more dependent on technology. Mike Frattantoni, who's going to be our next guest here in just a few moments, is the president of MISMO, who's the Mortgage Industry Standards. What's the MISMO stand for? All that. The Mortgage Industry, I had it here
Mortgage
just a second. Mortgage Industry Standards Maintenance
Organization,
MISMO. Man, who created that? I know Mike didn't create that. He would have made it a lot simpler. But anyway, MISMO, it is what it is. And I think when you look at this and this whole consolidation, I see fewer options not being good. And I am concerned about this consolidations going on for two reasons. Number one, do they focus on innovation, which you're famous for? And are they more focused on just consolidating market share and power? Where is the lender? Where are the lender's need? Where's the innovation in all of that? That's the big concern I have. But for those of you who want to know more about innovation, you've got to get to Tony's website. It's www.progressinlending.com. You can email Tony at tony@progressinlending.com. Get more information about it. Tony Garantano, founder of Progress in Lending Association. It's so good to have you on the broadcast, kind of giving your perspective on what's going on out there, Tony. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, Dave.
It's always a pleasure, Tony. Look forward to having you back next week. Folks, we will be right back after this word about an upcoming conference in Michigan that I'm really excited about. Folks, we'll be right back. Stay tuned.
I have an exciting announcement. I'll be speaking at the Michigan Mortgage Lenders Association annual conference August 5th through the 7th. Right now here with me is Joanne Mizraka, who is the executive director. Joanne, I'm just really excited to be there with you.
We're happy to have you. It's our annual lending conference. It's August 5th through the 7th. At the Grand Traverse Resort. It's just outside of Traverse City. Our theme is called Staying Alive in an Era of Change. It's kind of a play off the disco song, but still it's so appropriate that anyone who's in the industry is really staying alive. We've had all this change going on, and the people that are left are the survivors and the ones that are still staying alive. So that's our theme. We have not only you as a speaker, but Brian Chappelle. We have Frank and Brian, the Daily Show guys, they're going to do a workshop for us. Steve Richmond from Genworth always does a great job. So we're looking forward to it, and we have some golf outing, a wine tasting tour. It's a great event.
How can they learn more about it? What's the website that they can go to?
The website is www.mmla.net.
And I'm excited to be up there for several reasons. It's a great event, and all these conferences are good. And you need to be attending conferences, folks. And also, it's going to be hopefully much cooler. Hopefully, Alice, what won't be hitting me up there is what hit me in Minnesota this last week, and that is nearly 100-degree temperatures and 90-plus humidity. It was just too much. So anyway, hope to see you up there, folks. Go on that website, learn about it, connect with us. There is another conference coming up that I think that you must attend. This is one of those must-attends. The NBA has got a conference coming up in Dallas in September the 9th through the 11th, and it's the Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum, and I am very excited about getting up and attending that and hear what's going on. Part and parcel with that, we have as our special guest Mike Fratantoni, who's Vice President of the Mortgage Bankers Association. He's responsible for helping organize and bring together that conference up in there in Dallas. And we're going to talk more about that in just a bit. But Mike, it's good to have you. Michael, it's good to have you on the program again. This is really the time, Michael, for us to focus in a lot of the issues that are going on. But a little background for our listeners, for those of you who don't know, Michael is the responsible for single family research and policy development. He is the guy that puts together the industry surveys. I'll tell you, the amount of knowledge and data that's in his head is scary. He's giving economic and mortgage origination forecasts. I want to get into that some, Mike, in just a minute. He's also on the industry technology efforts. He's working with that, as we mentioned a bit earlier, that he's the president of the Mortgage Industry Standards Organization, MISMO. He is also on the staff at the MBA for the Risk Management Forum. Mike has just goes on and on with all of his information. He was at Washington Mutual for a period of time. He was a director of economic policy at Fannie Mae. I could go on and on. Senior economist at Fannie Mae's credit policy. He has his PhD from Johns Hopkins University and his BA from College of William & Mary. Mike, good to have you on the broadcast.
Dave, thanks for having me on again.
You bet. Well, let's talk. I mean, we've got the conferences coming up, and I want to get to that towards the end of the broadcast, but there are a lot of issues facing our industry. It's just kind of scary and over the top. Alice brings us the update each and every week on what's going on in the regulatory world. If you could kind of give, I mean, one of the reasons I think your perspective is so unique, you're a guy that does all these studies you're doing on the behalf of the NBA, and we see it as an impact of what's going on, but I don't wonder if you don't have a little bit different perspective, as I think we're on the same side of the page that you see this as a threat, it's not good, but I wonder if you don't see it slightly different from what Alice and I see it as, is just all out, just ugly stuff for the industry. What is your perspective on the changing regulatory environment, Michael?
Well, it certainly is an incredible amount of activity that we're trying to keep up with, and for all those people out there trying to run a company at the same time that they're trying to understand these regulatory developments, just, you know, encourage them. Lean on us to the extent that you can. We'll try to keep you informed on what developments are. I think you're right, though. The general tone of the regulations coming out are all in the same direction. It's all acting to restrict the amount of credit that's available, particularly to folks who have somewhat weaker credit, folks who don't have large down payments, folks who really are on the margin today between getting a loan and not getting a loan. And most of the regs that we're seeing would bring that line in and put them on the side where they're unable to get a loan. You know, we really make no bones about it. If you look from 2005 to 2007, there were a lot of bad loans made.
Yes, there was.
You know,
no question.
No-doc lending to people with weak credit and low down payment, that those were mistakes. And I think the market has you know, very understandably moved to tighten credit and really eliminate some of those occasions to make bad loans. And it certainly makes sense that you know, the industry seems to have a memory of about 15 or 20 years. But you know, let's really try to bring that message home and really sort of outlaw certain types of loan products that didn't perform well, outlaw some features, you know, very deeply teased ARMs that lead to significant payment shock, Yeah, those were always a bad idea, and I think the industry has learned time and again that low doc and no doc lending typically doesn't end well. So we're all in agreement with that. It's just when you go beyond that and start hardwiring debt to income ratios, that would really restrict lending to the kind of borrowers that you want to see re-enter the market, or with the QRM risk retention rule mandating 20% down payments to really get access to the best rates. That just doesn't make a lot of sense when you're trying to get the housing market to recover.
That's the point. I mean, you talk about originations. You do these reports on originations. And what are you changing your forecast based on these regulations, Michael?
You know, it is a bit of a subjective overlay. After we run the economic and econometric models, it spits out a number for us. But we've got to put a lot of judgment on there along a number of different factors. You know, one is the situation in Europe, right? There's no
right.
economic model which captures that right now. The other is you're at a place where the Federal Reserve has kept short-term rates at zero for 4 years, and they're announcing they're going to keep it there for another 2 years. So absolutely unprecedented. That's difficult to put into a model. A third factor, you have the federal government facing this fiscal cliff where beginning of 2013,
we could
see some very sharp hikes in tax rates really across the board, and very sharp cuts in government spending. We're assuming at this point that our Congress and the administration work together to come to some compromise which at least doesn't throw the U.S. back into a recession.
Boy,
that's
a question. We just don't see anybody working together in Washington. I mean, I know you're working on behalf of our lenders, but as far as it inside the regulatory body or inside of the legislative body, we're just not seeing that. It's just... It's a real concern. Let's focus a little bit on that. As you're looking at changing regulatory environment, do you see, Michael, this election changing, or how this election, the outcome of this election, might change the regulatory climate we're in, or will it?
So let me start with sort of the fiscal climate, because I think that's where it's more clear.
Yes.
So I think if President Obama were to be reelected, he's faced with this fiscal cliff situation. I think his instinct would be more towards letting the tax rates rise and perhaps curbing some of the spending cuts that we're seeing. Where I think if Governor Romney gets elected, I think the emphasis might be the other way of constraining the increases in taxes, but same hard hit in terms of cuts in spending. In terms of economic impact, it's going to be a tough road to hoe either way. On the regulatory side, you look at Dodd-Frank, the creation of the CFPB, Elizabeth Warren's brainchild in a academic article, this is one of the things that they are most proud of. So I would expect that Democratic administration, you're going to continue to see the build up and build out of the CFPB. Don't know what would happen if a President Romney were to be elected. We might expect a little bit less in the way of ambitious regulatory initiatives.
Well, Joe and Alice and I were talking a little bit about what's going on in California. I'm going to toss the mic to Joe because I know he had some of his customers write in about this mortgage seizure. Joe?
Yeah, I mean the use of eminent domain to essentially force lenders to do principal reductions. It seems very real in a few counties in California. How do you see it playing out?
Well, that's a great question. It's certainly even they're asking for this use of eminent domain on the behalf of the county. Essentially forcing an investor to take a significant loss on mortgage-backed securities they're holding. I look at it from a historical context. We've had a couple of examples in the past dozen or so years, one in Cook County, Illinois, one in Georgia, where through state legislative or local legislative efforts, there was an attempt to really take money from investors and pass it on to borrowers. And one line of thought will be, well, that's going to be more expensive for borrowers going forward. The other, and the lending community predicts this, is no, there will be no loans made in those jurisdictions. The investors will pull out completely. There will be no secondary market, and lenders won't have a choice. And, you know, frankly, that's my expectation with this effort as well, that if it goes through, there will be a check-off box as you're assembling a pool of securities, a pool of loans into a security, which is, are there loans in these jurisdictions? If there are, we're not buying. And I think that that's just going to be just a flat-out condition on the part of investors, because these are losses that you really can't predict. This is just a grab for money that's going from one group of people to another, and that's just not a game that I think most investors are interested in playing.
Alice, you track what's going on across the country. Do you see other states with any evidence that this is going to continue, Alice, from your analysis?
You know, I don't know off the top of my head, Dave. I'd have to go check with that to see kind of what's pending in other states. You know,
I know there are some other things pending. I mean, I just can't remember which states they are, but they are looking at this. And I know there's some state regulators that are looking at this as far as, I mean, it's obviously has some, if you want to get reelected, look at what I did for you lately kind of thing about it. But the suicidal consequences of having liquidity lending altogether, it's like Mike said, it's not increased price, it's evaporation of financing earlier. Alice?
Well, I agree that it absolutely would shut the door. You know, that as you mentioned already, investors would say exclude those loans from anything that I want to purchase. But it's worth checking into. Maybe we can get back with folks on it on a following show to kind of see what other states might be on trying to go down this track and maybe further down it before we can get California to realize the problem it's going to create. So, Mike, I don't know, I'm assuming MBA might have some research on that as well, too, because you're certainly tracking state laws, you know, on an individual state basis as well.
Yeah, to this point, San Bernardino County and a couple other jurisdictions in California, that's the only place I've heard this happening.
Mm-hmm.
But we definitely got our ear to the ground on it. If I could just, you know, raise one other area sort of as a counterexample. You know, think about Phoenix, Arizona, right? One of the hardest hit areas in the entire country. They sort of took their lumps, though, and the foreclosure process has moved fairly efficiently through the backlog there. We're seeing 10% year-over-year gains in home prices in Phoenix right now, right? So it's a little bit of a morality play here of, you know, what happens when you take the bath of just, you know, taking your lumps early, moving through it, and then letting the housing market recover on its own. You're getting migration back.
Let the free markets.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, let the free markets work. Without question. Yeah, I mean, I agree. So that's a great example. I think that is an example. We got clients out there, and we were just out there, and we're hearing about that, and they go, it was excruciating during that time. And I think that's the overregulation tendency. And I think we go back to politics. I think if we have a Republicans in there, I think they have a tendency to be more prone, or I guess I should ask you a question. You're closer. You're in the beltway. Are Republicans more prone to less regulation, and are Democrats more prone to overregulate or more regulation? Do you see that?
I think that's generally true. The problem is just the inertia that some of these agencies get in, and you know, they've certainly got a running start now over the past couple of years, and so many different regulations that are in the pipeline. So I'm not sure how much a political change can impact or influence that at this point.
Yeah, we're not sure. Alice, I know you had some questions on underwriting standards and some of the things going on there.
Well, I think, you know, Mike, do you see that there's going to be any consideration in this QM to some of the statistical information that we've learned in the use of automated underwriting? It just seems so counterintuitive that they're trying to develop QM on this manual basis, manual description of a credit profile, when everything we do today is in DU and LP. And isn't any of that information statistically valid to apply to the way they're defining QM?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and just lines right up with the way MBA's approached this issue, where in our comment last July and in the comment we're about to send in today, it really is an appeal to, you know, consider what the industry's learned over the last 30 years. And really, when you're looking at ability to repay, there are some industry standards in terms of underwriting processes and underwriting standards that really are applicable here. And in some ways, it really wouldn't be wise to take a one-dimensional approach and look at one variable like DTI and make a determination solely based upon that. What one recommendation that we've kicked around is, what if you just take that DU or LP or FHA total scorecard approval as one indicator of an ability to repay? Because that would really be multidimensional and capturing the compensating factors that a human underwriter would be capturing as well.
And have they looked at that at all? I mean, I'm curious. It's obviously from a political standpoint, you go, how come Fannie and Freddie can't respond and defend their own systems? it seems like their systems are being ignored, or the statistical basis and soundness of their systems are being questioned.
Well, that's certainly, since they've been in conservatorship, they've really lost their voice, and that's, that's a point that that Dave Stevens has made repeatedly, is that since that's happened, it's really forced the rest of us, including the MBA, to be a whole lot more vocal, because you don't have Fannie and Freddie out there advocating on the industry's behalf anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think, by the way, that brings up new David Stevens. We're just glad to see he's back at the MBA. That came as – his departure was a surprise and his return was a surprise. So David is just constantly keeping us on the edge of our seats as to what's going on. But I'm really thrilled to see him back, and I'm glad to see the leadership that he obviously will continue to bring on that. Joe, you and I have been both hearing some reports about repurchase demands, have we not?
Well, yeah, I was going to ask. Obviously, the industry's been really hurt by the level of repurchase demands, but it kind of feels like maybe we've hit the worst of it. Do you see things continuing as they have in the past, or maybe getting a little better?
I go back to my days as a credit modeler. We're well past sort of peak default time for loans that were made 05 to 07, even into 08. You typically think, three and a half years past origination is when you're most likely to see the highest delinquency and default rates. So we should be on the downside of the mountain for those vintages. And I think the level of repurchase activity is going to follow along with that. We really saw the worst of it last year. That said, continue to hear from members that this is probably the most important business concern that they have, that, if they miss an initial on page 15 of a 100-page packet, the whole thing's coming back to them, regardless of the fact that it has no impact on the actual performance of the loan. So it really is sort of a foot fault rather than a true problem with the loan. So we continue to hear that. We continue to hear that, this is a loan that I successfully defended against a repurchase a year and a half ago, and here it is coming back to me with a different problem flagged. Even though many of our members tell us that their defenses are often successful, the majority of the cases for a lot of small and medium-sized lenders, they just keep coming back, and even when they are successful, it's costly. It's costly in terms of the legal advice they need to seek. It's costly in terms of the own time that they're spending defending old loans as opposed to making new ones. So it really is one of the prime concerns for the industry.
Mayo, do you think that policies are changing inside those institutions that are
great question
that have issued those demands?
We've been in regular conversation with both Fannie and Freddie and with FHFA, and really just trying to, at least on a go-forward basis, lay out the ground rules a bit more clearly, about
mm-hmm.
materiality, about really what constitutes something that would lead to a repurchase demand, about a sunset provision, how long after that origination is it really a fault with the origination process as opposed to changing economic conditions or life events that hit the borrower that really had nothing to do with that initial on the 15th page? So I think we are making some headway with FHFA and with Fannie and Freddie as well, waiting for that document that comes out sort of really writing down what are the rules of the game going forward. I don't know if will we have the same chance for older loans.
Well, go ahead, Alice.
Oh, I was just going to ask, Mike, you know, kind of along that same line is, you know, that's scaring lenders, right? All these repurchase demands just make the underwriters more tense. And, you know, they keep I remember the days where you said if you didn't have a repurchase, then you weren't a good underwriter, because right? then you were leaving loans on the table. Well, I really see folks going, I don't want any. I can't afford, because, like you said, minor mistakes, you know, are being multiplied. So, you know, do you see underwriting standards tightening even further? I mean, we're dealing with property valuation issues, documentation, you know, just I know companies running compliance software five times in the process. Is this going to get worse?
Yeah. You know, I think if it was strictly you know, a market and business issue, I think it may stay where we are. So you'd still see average FICOs at Fannie and Freddie of 760 and 700 FHA, all because lenders are being conservative with respect to repurchase risk. You know, I think going forward, the real wild card is what happens with these regulations. I think if QM or risk retention go the wrong way, yes, there could be further tightening. But you know, I think there's going to be a psychological change in the market now that we're starting to see home prices go up. I think that really does make a difference both to prospective buyers and to lenders. I think you might see things loosening up a bit. Again, if it was purely a market and business decision, but again, you have that regulatory overlay, which is the wild card.
Well, and same with the servicing side. You know, do you see servicing, you know, obviously they're getting locked down even tighter and tighter and having to have more specific processes, single point of contact and QC. How do you see that moving forward? Are they going to continue to get tighter and more regulation?
Well, there's going to be the continued push for a national servicing standard, and you know, to what extent that develops out of the consent decree and the AG settlement from last year, you know, to what extent that gets tweaked somewhat to really allow a small to medium sized servicer to stay alive in this kind of environment.
Do you see risk of that? Michael, that's because we did a whole segment on, and we're encouraging, advising people to get into servicing. And the small medium guy, we've seen the advantage go to them. Do you see that shifting?
You know, I think it really is up to the CFPB. They do have an ear for the small business community, and that's what your small and medium servicers are.
Yep.
At the same time, there is a push that if you're going to have a national servicing standard, you want it to be level playing field and uniform. And so sort of how do you bridge those two concepts? I think there's a way to do it, but there's a risk out there that if, you know, if a small servicer is held to the exact same standards as one of the top five, that may not be a viable business model. So definitely something we're keeping our eye on.
Well, we look about risk management. We've looked at a combination of it being art and sciences. I like that when you put some notes together for me as we were asking questions. I looked at the art and science component of this whole risk management. Give us some insights as to why where the art is and the science of it. I loved your commentary there.
Yeah, you know, so past 20 years, we talked a little bit about automated underwriting systems, whether it be DULP or the number of others that have been developed. It really is a question of statistical modeling using historical data and sort of fancy, sophisticated tools and a bunch of PhDs like myself sort of sitting down and building out those models. Those models can be very useful in formulating sort of a quick summary of what a borrower's credit profile looks like. It's only as good as the data you put in, the quality of data you put in, and it's only as good as the environment you're doing that modeling over. So if it's a very unusual environment, it's not going to be very helpful for predicting a more normal environment. If you just were modeling over a very typical environment, it's not going to help you in 2008 or 2009. It's not going to give you very good predictions. So on top of that sophisticated modeling, you really need some folks with some gray hairs in their head, some good experience, good judgment.
Cheering for the gray. Go ahead.
That's right. You can say, you know, your model looks great, but, you know, 15 years ago I tried to run that loan product and it was a disaster. So, again, some of that institutional memory. And, you know, okay, where are you getting that data? That's from, you know, lender X or broker Y or investor Z. I know there's a problem back there with the quality of their data. I think having a real understanding of data quality, both our variables being defined consistently and, you know, is your system tied through? Is there a point where some fat thumbs can get in there and get some data errors? That really is the art of really balancing what you can get from a statistical model and what you can get from your sort of your vendor's best technological offerings with what do you know in your gut and what do you know from your experience. And I think the best underwriters, the best risk managers, the best quality assurance people today really can do that balance.
Joe, you and I have watched executives for a long, long time try to balance this risk and try to do that. And I'm just wondering, Joe, about the seat of the pants. I mean, have so many of us that have been small business operators have run by that intuition, that sense of that. What's your thoughts, Joe?
Well, it makes me wonder, how does somebody manage the risk of a nationwide network of branches, especially like a net branch? And so, Michael, you know, how do you see the balance happening between how much should I grow versus how much risk can I take, or how can I control my risk so I can grow?
Man, how do executives balance that?
You know, I think it in some ways it's the executive wearing the hat of the chief risk officer of the organization, so taking the time to understand, okay, where do I face that potential repurchase exposure, right? Where do I face that that potential credit risk that's not really visible to me when I'm sitting down looking at loan volume month after month? On the other hand, they do have to grow the business. So understanding if I put on a constraint and I make myself the most conservative institution around, exactly what am I giving up in terms of loan volume? So, you know, we ask a lot of executives in this industry. We really do. But I think in today's world, it's even more. It is being the top of the house, sort of with the scales in their hand and understanding. Okay, when do I need to lean closer towards my risk management folks and really tighten the reins? When do I need to take a little more risk just to get that volume in the door?
And you just brought up your risk management folks, which is, you know, it's becoming a requirement in any organization to have somebody
that is primarily
in charge, right? And so how much does he rely or she rely on that risk management team to help control that the exposures?
Yeah, we have seen in our compensation survey each year, the number of employees with risk in their title just really grow exponentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, back in the old days, you had an underwriting team and a chief underwriter, and you might have had a QA staff, and you had somebody watching your pipeline hedging. You had somebody obviously watching your regulatory compliance area. Oftentimes now, a lot of lenders are having a centralized risk unit with control or responsibility for all of them, and understanding, okay, if I'm taking a bit more credit risk over here, does that mean how does that impact my interest rate risk, or how does it impact my pipeline risk, and where's the repurchase demand going to come in there? So a bit more of a centralized focus.
Alice, we've been seeing some developments in risk management, you know, and you've been saying this for some time, that there, if you don't have a risk manager in your group, you've got to have one.
Well, and it's amazing to me what people, even though they get the position set up, they don't. Well, I'll go in and see where they're not really utilizing that position correctly. They, you know, I said, well, who's, is this person also pulling in, you know, the data that you're finding in your pre-funding and your employment verifications prior to closing? And they're like, no, we're just closing the loan. You know, there's data leaking out of all different places within the company that this person needs to aggregate, and as Mike was already saying, really put that together in a holistic approach. So, Mike, are you seeing any other developments? You know, at least that's been my message, is to you know, stop the leaking of collect all your data. Are there any good models that you can recommend for how to put all this together in terms of I can hear Andy Schell talking from a financial standpoint.
I think for me, what I've sort of found most interesting talking to COO, CEO level folks, is really a change in philosophy about it. You know, whereas before, you know, 5-10 years ago, you had a unit that post-closing would do an audit and you'd find out what your defect rate was on the loans that you had made. That just doesn't fly anymore.
No.
Like, you're still going to do those, but you're going to do that before you close the loan, and you're going to try to iron it out so that there are no defects anymore, or you know, there's perfection's unattainable, but you're going to get as close to that as you possibly can. So I think that's the change in mindset of, you know, risk management proactively, and you know, much less sort of rear guard action after the fact.
And not relying just on your investors to catch everything. I see a lot of that. You know, people just keep throwing at it, at the investors, and hopefully it sticks, you know, as opposed to trying to solve the problems on their own ahead of time and avoid that repurchase risk.
Right. And the other, you know, per the conversation with Tony, you don't just hand it off to a vendor and assume that your problem is taken care of.
Right.
You're responsible for those loans.
Yeah,
so you may have a vendor that you work with to help you on some of this, but at the end of the day, you're responsible. So you need to understand what they're doing sort of top to bottom.
We've got a conference that's coming up here, the Risk Management Conference. Let's talk about that. A lot of what we're talking about, you're addressing a lot of these issues, and I know the ones that need to be attending this conference are a lot of the risk managers, but it's really across the board. I see in your website that you say risk managers, risk officers, chief underwriters, chief appraisers, heads of mortgage operations. Talk about the conference a little bit that's coming up here in Dallas, September 9th through the 11th, And this is probably one of the most critical conferences companies attend of this whole year right now, I think, with the developments of some of the things we've been talking about on this broadcast.
Well, yeah, thanks, Dave, for bringing it up. You know, we really designed this conference very consciously to be different from some other MBA events. You know, MBA event like secondary or annual, a lot of times it's a meeting place to do business. That's a very important function of those conferences.
Yeah.
This one really is driven by the content. This is for people in your risk organization, in your underwriting and QA organizations to come and learn the latest from really the experts in the field. So we've got it set up with four separate tracks, one on quality assurance, one on underwriting, one on servicing QC, which we think is going to be absolutely critical for anybody
really
in servicing
huge, yeah.
business these days, and then one on risk analytics, you know, looking at things like what's happened to credit score models, you know, if you're holding loans on portfolio, what do you need to think about in terms of asset liability management? So really covering both the science, the sophisticated modeling I talked about, and a lot of the art in some of these other areas.
Well, I think there's a lot of great content in there. What about HARP? Give us an update. I saw in your notes earlier, how are these HARP loans performing? Are you going to be getting into that at the conference?
Yeah, we've got some real great folks, some from Wall Street, some from lenders, and some from FHA coming and talking about, you know, what is the credit and prepayment performance on HARP loans, what's happening in terms of the streamlined refis from FHA, how are they performing relative to expectation. You know, not a week goes by that I don't spend talking a fair amount about latest HARP development. So I think that's going to be a well-attended session.
I think all of these, I look at the various aspects of these sessions. Will you just be speaking about the regulations, about some of the, I'm looking through the agenda items on the website here. Tell a little bit about what you're encouraging at this conference, attendees, or what you're educating them on about CFPB and then things like what's going on in California with right and eminent domain. Are you going to be covering those topics?
Yeah, absolutely. So on Sunday, but before the conference really kicks off, we have a special two-hour session just really trying to completely cover the regulatory environment. We're going to have both MBA and other outside expert speakers trying to address each of these topics. We're also planning on having a senior official from the CFPB attend Monday morning at the opening general session, as well as senior risk officials from Ginnie Mae, from FHA, and potentially from a large lender or two as well.
Well, the drums are signaling we are at the end of this broadcast. We appreciate you being with us, Michael, and give you some update. Folks, you want to go to the website, more at www.mortgagebankers.org/ R for risk, M for management, Q for quality assurance, A for quality assurance, 12.htm. So go over to the Mortgage Bankers website. You can just Google it, the MBA's Risk Management and Quality Assurance Forum for 2012. September 9th through the 11th. Michael, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate you being a part of the broadcast each and every week, everybody. We're thrilled to have you here. Special thank you goes to Allison Joe. Thank you so much. And if you're out attending the Secondary Conference, Western Secondary Conference, look up Andy Schell. He's going to be out there. Look forward to talking to you, everybody. Have a great week, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week and thank you for listening.